Welcome to PCMC.
All right.
I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here with co-host, rock on tour.
Star.
I'm under the weather.
So am I.
And you can hear me sniffling. I'm going to try not to sniffle. And I'm going to try to edit out all the sniffles. But whatever happens, happens. I'm here with Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
How are you, Anthony?
I'm feeling under the weather myself. It just came over me a couple hours ago, as I was just telling you.
Me as well.
It's that time of year.
It is.
I feel like exactly a year ago we were recording. Because I remember we were saying that this is the time of year when, you know, just depression comes in and like a cool breeze and settles in to your bones.
Like an old friend.
Like an old friend, and you're feeling sick, and you just, it's the nadir of the whole year.
But, you know, as a mentally ill person.
Mentally chill.
Yeah, you bet. I sometimes like being physically sick.
Oh, that's interesting. Why?
Because a lot of my anxiety about random bullshit.
You're distracted.
Get sidelined, and I'm just worrying about like simple things.
Well, you figured it out.
It's almost a break from the normal bullshit in my head.
When you were a kid and you were sick, did you sleep in weird positions on the bed?
I mean, it like, depends on.
I feel like I've talked about this with other people, and it's a common kid thing. Like when you're sick, I guess it's like from, you know, like getting tired of being in the same position. Like you'll lay like upside down on the bed.
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like you'll lay the opposite way, or you'll lay horizontally.
Yeah, you just,
or lie, I guess I should say. But go ahead.
I think you want me to edit that out. That horrible.
I'm so sorry. What will people think of me?
Grammar. Yeah, you know, interesting. I feel like you're kind of like a cat in the sun.
Yeah.
You're like trying to find, I don't know, I think,
like the position where you won't feel sick.
Yeah, exactly. You're just trying to find anything that is anything.
Yeah. It's like when you're also like, I feel like when you're a kid and you're not feeling good, you, or at least I, like flipped the pillow over and over and over again, like looking for the cool side.
You need that cool breeze to calm down that inside
and
heat.
That's how you know, like you knew you were not feeling well, or maybe you had a fever because it was just like everything felt burning.
Yeah.
It sucks.
This is a great way to open a podcast. This is BCMC. This is a podcast about popular culture, media, movies, video games, TV shows, puzzles.
That's right.
We're looking at a puzzle right now that you're working on.
An undone puzzle.
It's
I've only got the, it's Fantasia.
You've only got the Mickey.
I've only got Yen Sid here done, right in the center. And the rest of the puzzle is going to be a real bitch.
Well, I hate to be this guy, but I'm going to fucking push the imaginary glasses up my nose and say that Yen Sid is the name of the sorcerer.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And this is
Mickey's
his apprentice,
the sorcerer's
correct.
Apprentice.
He's, you're right.
He steals.
So sorry about that.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, I apologize.
Yen Sid is Disney backwards. Bet you didn't know that.
Who didn't? Who could know that? He's also, that character is also one of a million characters that it's like, he's based on Disney. And it's like, every guy with a mustache is based on Disney. Anthony, welcome.
Well, welcome to my home.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm
How's
happy
2020
to be back.
Going for you?
Sounds
great. So,
how's 2020 going for you?
Oh, it's peachy keen.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine so far. You know how it is. This is gonna be a weird one. I can already feel it. You want to go? Yeah.
Where are we going? Are we going to Trailer Corner? Because speaking of weird ones,
I wanted to go to the news first.
All right, let's go to the news first. Because boy, did you pack a wallop.
Mm-hmm. There's so much news going on. Holy moly. You might be saying, hey, you want to talk about Iran? You want to talk about an entire continent on fire?
Nope.
You want to talk about koala bears becoming like
functionally extinct.
Endangered in like a fucking week?
Nope.
Nope. Because that's not what we do on PCMC. On PCMC, we fucking, the only time we ever deal with reality is through, you know, a dark and serious work of art. Let's talk about the serious issues. What the kids call the JJ cut.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I feel like you know more about this than I do, but from what I've read, and now you can educate me, I'm now reading that there's no such thing as the JJ cut.
I believe there is no such thing as the JJ cut.
And that everybody's projecting what they wanted from Rise of Skywalker onto this imaginary JJ cut.
Okay. That, I believe, is going on.
Okay.
I do believe this. You could put this in the same boat as the people that hated The Last Jedi and hate Disney, hate fucking Disney Plus, and you know, you could put it all in a big boat of like. Also, part of that is like weird, like sexism, but then also odd, like George Lucas worship for no reason. Because some people are like, oh, it's the Lucas JJ cut because Lucas liked it. And it's like, well, you don't have any evidence that Lucas even saw this cut. Like,
you know
why
what else Lucas liked?
Into it?
The prequels.
Yeah.
Lucas liked those a lot.
Also, I really feel like Lucas has very little to do with anything these days.
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
Other than, like, he'll come and visit the set of the movies that aren't the main Skywalker movies.
Right.
So, the fabled JJ cut is this idea that JJ, and I think there might be some truth to this, that the original movie was long. It was like 3 hours, and Disney forced them to cut it down. That would make sense given how breakneck the film's pace is,
right,
and how there seems to be things that are a bit confusing. Even the writer, Chris Terrio, who wrote the masterpiece Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Oh my God.
He has even said stuff about it. He said, oh, I know it's weird that Han shows up, but Leia is using the Force to project Han. That would have made more sense in the longer
that's
version.
Not clear at
we
all.
Made more. We explained how Palpatine came back in the longer version. There was more Rose in the longer version. You know,
I also heard. So now this could be like rumor, but I heard from a coworker that in the original version, at the end, the final battle between Rey and Palpatine was like more epic, and you saw a lot of Force ghosts.
Yeah, this is
background.
What I don't believe.
Yeah, I don't this believe is that what I, either.
So there is the scene at the end where Rey's on the ground and she hears the voice of, she hears Qui-Gon Jinn, she hears
Mace Windu, Anakin.
She hears Anakin, she hears Obi-Wan, she hears Yoda. She hears Ahsoka from the cartoon. She hears Freddie Prinze Jr. from the cartoon.
Just Freddie Prinze Jr. as himself.
Yes. Jedi Knight, Freddie Prinze Jr. And some people... well, you know what? I should say this is all coming from a Reddit user who's like presented this big Reddit post as like, I'm an insider and I know this inside scoop.
Hasn't Reddit done enough?
I know. To me, if that was ever an idea, that was stupid. It's better just the way it is with the voices. To actually see a bunch of... Because also, it would... it would take a lot away from Rey to just have them all there. What, are they just going to stand there?
Yeah, and I'm sure if that were filmed, where's the footage? I'm sure Hayden Christensen would be dying to get that out there.
Right. I don't believe that. Also, we should say, the biggest red flag that this is all... Malarkey, not monarchy. That's a woman's first period. Malarkey.
Oh boy.
This Reddit user says that the reason this happened is because Disney wanted to screw over JJ and wanted the movie to fail because he was going to go over to Warner Brothers and make DC movies and they wanted to lower his profile.
Well, that I don't believe.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Why would Disney...
That's the plot of the producers or something.
Yeah, why would Disney tank one of its biggest franchises just to screw over the director
especially
of it.
Especially since it didn't tank. Like, it's doing
right,
fine.
Right. Like, but again, I think that shows the weirdness it's coming from because it's coming from these people who are like, ah, it's a total failure. Which I've had problems with it. You heard my episode about it.
Yeah.
But I also, my butt is not that hurt by it.
That was real scorched earth, that episode.
But you know what? I've seen it 3 times now. I enjoy it more.
You keep going back to see it.
I enjoy it.
I like that in the last episode you started with a little piece that you recorded later on where you're like, I've since seen this film again and I don't feel as strongly about
all the
negative aspects.
Yeah. All the bones I had to pick are still there. But accepting that...
It's fucking Star Wars.
Right. Accepting that it undid the things that I liked about The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
It's an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a good follow-up to Force Awakens. I just don't think it's a good follow-up to Last Jedi.
Yeah.
But then again, like, Return of the Jedi is not as good as Empire Strikes Back either.
Return of the Jedi is weakest of the original three.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of was expecting it to be the weakest. I don't know.
Yeah. So, also, people who talk about the JJ cut don't understand, like, how movies are made. Like, it's not like...
These may have been ideas that were pitched, but that doesn't mean that there's a cut of it that exists somewhere.
Right, and they may have even been things that were shot. Hey, they may have even been in the original assembly. When you film a film, you the first thing you do is you make an assembly, which is not a film, but basically all of the footage put in chronological order.
That's where everybody has to get together and wear a white collared shirt.
No. You're thinking of assembly. In grade school.
Oh, okay, sorry.
It's a mistake I make. It's you've just assembled all the footage. It's just, here's all the bullshit. We got rid of all the shit that's clearly bad. Actors fucking up. A plane comes overhead. And, like, all the shit that's, like, literally unusable is gone.
Like a mic comes into frame.
Right. This is just all the usable stuff in chronological order. And then the editor picks at it and makes a movie out of it. Now, some of these scenes probably existed. There probably was more Rose. One of the things that the writer is saying is there was more Rose with Leia, but the Leia effects didn't work the way they wanted it to, so they had to
scrap
that.
Which is to say, at all.
Right. To me, I believe that because I don't think the Leia stuff in the movie as it is works that well.
No. What she says doesn't match up with what anyone else is saying.
Yeah, it's... Because sometimes you see the character speaking to Leia go through some sort of linguistic acrobat to try to get to where she's going to be.
They'll be like, General Leia, what should we do? And she'll be like, JJ, we going to break soon? And then it'll be like, yes, my name is JJ.
I'm X-Wing pilot JJ fucking Bullethead or whatever the fuck. God, remember when Star Wars characters had names like Hammerhead and fucking Snaggletooth?
Anyway. That was fun stuff. Remember the Wolfman?
Yeah, there was a straight up... In the original movie, there's a straight up Wolfman and the devil.
Yeah, there is. There's a devil. And the Wolfman has glowing red eyes.
Oh, stupid. So silly. you know, the idea that there's a cut that... maybe... It doesn't exist. It's not in some vault somewhere.
What has JJ said about this himself, or has he said nothing?
I don't know. This I'm not quite sure on. I think he's been... I think he has expressed that he wanted it to be a little longer.
Okay.
Well, which I don't know why they didn't let it be, because Endgame is the most successful movie ever, and that was like over 3 hours.
Or, like you said on the podcast, and like the guys over at We Hate Movies said... you both said, why are we beholden to a trilogy? It could have been split into two films.
Yeah. There's some rumors that JJ wanted to do that, but I don't know if that's true either.
The cast is fiercely defensive of JJ.
Yeah, and
says something.
It also says something that, at least in the press, JJ Abrams is very, very... He speaks very highly of...
Rian Johnson
and... what's her first name? Tran... The actress who plays Rose Tiki.
Oh, I don't know.
I want to say Lisa Marie Tran, but that's not right.
That's Lisa Marie Presley.
Yeah.
Well, we both have cell phones here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Kelly Marie?
Kelly Marie Tran.
Is that right?
I believe it is Kelly Marie.
Yes, I was right.
He's been very kind. He's been very nice, saying he said, she was one of the things that Rian gave me that I felt was a real gift. So, he seems like a nice guy. I will say that just from seeing the film, it feels like Disney was the... I described it as cowardly in the podcast about it.
Okay.
I think Disney's probably more cowardly than J.J. Abrams is. Okay. I think...
But this is what I don't understand, and I've had trouble with this.
Yeah.
There was a big backlash to Last Jedi from the fan community.
Yeah.
However, it was one of the best... critically reviewed Star Wars films of all time, and it also made $1 billion.
Yeah.
So why did they feel the need to course correct so hard when, by all like measures that actually mean something, Last Jedi was hugely successful?
That's a really great question. The joke is that they just listened to Reddit. I don't know why. I mean, there are some small indicators.
Unless Rian Johnson was just really hard to work with.
I don't think that. Well, we should say Solo made very little money.
Right.
So that would be one indicator.
Okay.
There's also early reports that say Galaxy's Edge does not have the attendance that Disney thought it was going to have.
Okay.
And even though Last Jedi was successful, every movie has made less money. Like, The Force Awakens made the most, Last Jedi made the second most, and The Rise of Skywalker made the third most. So, you could see
that's
at least
a normal trend, though, isn't it?
Yeah, for, no, yes, it is.
It's diminishing returns, right? Isn't it usually right. with movie series?
Right. You can, but I think those are the reasons why Disney, and even if it was a small group of people that really hated The Last Jedi, it became so much of the narrative around the film.
Which is interesting because, like I said, it made a lot of money and it was very well reviewed. So I feel like people will look back at history and look at the reviews and stuff and say, like, oh, this is a very well reviewed movie that made a lot right. of money. And then the ultimate irony is that The Rise of Skywalker is one of the worst reviewed
right.
Star Wars movies of all time.
Right. But it's if you, but then you'll go to the user review and the user review is very high.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is a lot of people like, oh, these. I don't know. The user reviews suck,
and there are plenty of people who just create accounts for that one movie.
And I believe, I mean, and you know, putting those people aside, you know, what are user reviews for? I want to get into this in segment two, but I saw Uncut Gems, which I thought was phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's got very high critic reviews because it's an excellent film. Right. It's got very, very low user reviews.
Was it people expecting an Adam Sandler movie?
It's people going, this movie was way too much. It was too tense and too shouty, and none of the characters are likable. Correct. Yes, that's what it is. That's like saying giving like 1 out of 5 stars to Catch in the Rye because Holden's really unlikable. It's yeah. like,
well, that's my review, but like, yeah,
right? But you know what I mean. Like, what the? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
You're undoing my puzzle right before my eyes.
I undid a piece
eyes.
Of the puzzle while I was talking. And
oh
Anthony
my god!
Fucking shot daggers at me. I'm so sorry. I'll leave it alone. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'll get into that more in segment two. But I don't know what users want, but it's
I don't know. Whatever.
Also, we should say this ties into these people that seem to be desperate for the Zack Snyder cut of Batman vs. Superman.
Oh yeah, that definitely.
Which
doesn't
I'm not
exist.
Even sure that exists. See, yeah, at least there's some. There's something to that in that it was mostly made by one director
yeah.
and then another director came in and kind of reshot a lot of it.
But at least, like, to its credit, like, Batman vs. Superman is just a horrible movie. And, like, mm-hmm. Rise of Skywalker, I don't think it's horrible. I think it's, you know, I liked it still. It was fine.
Right. There are rumors now, and again, this is rumors, that it might come back out with a longer version. I think it should. I think it should have been longer. I think you alleviate a lot of the problems if it's longer. Why
well,
were they so
right,
scared?
Yeah, I don't know. As of right now, Last Jedi is the longest one.
Right. I mean,
by like 20 minutes or so.
Giving it some room to breathe. Also, another thing we haven't talked about, and this is, I'm not sure if this is true or not. This I'm torn on. Some of what's supposedly in the JJ cut is Finn being much more actively using the Force.
Yes, I heard from somewhere, maybe it was from that podcast, that Finn's supposed to use the Force to like fix something,
and then they changed it and made BB-8
do it. Yeah, I don't know if that's true either.
Perhaps. Also, it would have made more sense out of that creepy scene with Janna and Lando.
Yeah, because that's supposed to, she's
his daughter.
His daughter. Yeah.
Right. We figured this out because the visual dictionary that came along with
yeah.
the movie said in Lando's backstory that his daughter was kidnapped.
Right.
That the First Order kidnapped the children of the old rebels, which is like, oh, so she's 100%
yeah.
his
yeah.
daughter.
Well, I kind of felt like that was cheap just in, A, it sent mixed messages because I feel like everybody I know who saw the movie was confused as to whether they were going to be in
right,
a sexual
because
relationship.
He's known as like a fuck king.
Or, or if, like a paternal, you know,
right.
father-daughter thing. And I also felt like it was kind of cheap because I
the only
suspect,
black character shouldn't be related to
well,
each
yeah.
other.
Well, yeah. But I also suspect that they're like setting up some kind of spinoff.
Yeah, I could see them together
and
going off
and it's just
doing
like,
something.
Oh, you're really going to set up a spinoff right in the middle of the last
right.
minute of the last
right.
Skywalker movie.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
what's that, like a backdoor pilot?
Yeah, like
let's find out.
Let's find out. And then he turns to the camera. This fall on Disney Plus.
Did you see those memes where it's like, "Hi, I'm the Mandalorian from The Mandalorian," and
yeah.
you're watching Disney Plus?
Yeah. So
the future's in The Mandalorian. That's what everybody's saying.
It is true. Yeah, it's hard. It was hard to be too mad at The Rise of Skywalker when it was in between the two-part finale.
Yeah, you
of
got
Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian. Everyone's
Have you watched
fine.
The Mandalorian?
All right. So I'm really bad at keeping up with things. I've watched the first 3 episodes and
uh-huh.
I really liked it.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
I'm eventually going to finish it when I get a day where I have nothing else going on. I'm saving it for a rainy day, kind of.
Yeah. I wanted grown up Baby Yoda to show up in Rise of Skywalker and just be like, hey everybody, I'm grown up Baby Yoda. Any one of those memes where it's like, you ever see the one of the guy who fucking, this is a classic in that video, he falls on his face outside of a 7-Eleven and then screams?
Yeah.
So that's a classic video. Somebody took that and he just falls, he's like, fuck!
And it's the end credits.
Yeah.
It's great.
So much fun.
So that's the JJ cut. So I don't think we'll ever see a JJ cut.
If some of the here's what's up. If some of these things exist, we'll see them as cut scenes on the Blu-ray. And by the way,
buying that?
You can already pre-order for $300.
Sure, the whole nine.
The whole Skywalker saga.
Not to go too deep.
I laugh at it, but I will buy it.
Not to go too deep into Star Wars because we want to move on, but somebody who I was talking to recently has never seen any of them and asked me what order he should watch them in. And would you agree with me that I think you need to watch them in the order in which they were released, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you should watch them 1 through 9.
Or go the release of the original trilogy, then the new trilogy, and then if you want prequels? More backstory, go to the prequels. Because I don't know if the prequels are that necessary.
What's interesting, though, is that the prequels introduce some stuff that only exists in the prequels and in the newest trilogy, but doesn't exist in the original trilogy. Like the word Sith. Yeah. Like the Sith, which is like the diametric opposite of
the
Jedi.
Name Palpatine.
Palpatine. I was just going to say.
In Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, and Darth Sidious.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all stuff that was never said in the original trilogy, but exists on the two bookend trilogies.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. I guess.
Yeah, you're a Palpatine. I guess if you never saw the prequels, you wouldn't even get that.
Right. I hate that he says you don't. It's his power. It's like, come on, guys. Let's not take away her.
Let's be woke.
Speaking of woke, moving on to our next news story. Director Terry Gilliam has gotten himself into a little bit of hot water by saying some crazy ass shit. Terry Gilliam, you may know as the director of Brazil, the director of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the director of The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
That's a classic from my childhood.
He's also one of the Monty Python. He's the only American member of the Monty Python.
Okay.
He also famously has a cursed movie that he's been working on for 30 years that he keeps trying to make and doesn't happen, and that's his Don Quixote movie.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm getting this from Vanity Fair. New Terry Gilliam interview is a masterclass in cringe by Jordan Hoffman. Expat filmmaker, animator, and Monty Python alum spoke with Britain's The Independent, ostensibly to discuss his most recent movie, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which he finally is happening, and Adam Driver's in it.
Okay.
In advance of its UK release. So bored of talking about the Adam Driver-led project that debuted at Cannes in May 2018, Gilliam instead offered up a slew of remarks about #MeToo, and race, each worth a white guy blinky face gif. Quote, when I announce that I'm a black lesbian in transition, people take offense at that. Why? He asked of the paper's Alexandra Pollard with a grin. The declaration which he has made before was part of a riff about race and gender that included him saying that he was tired as a white male of being blamed for everything that was wrong with the world. Quote, we're living in a time where there's always somebody responsible for your failures. All right, so he also called Me Too a witch hunt, and he spoke of the mob mentality. Now, I have no defense of this, but I might suggest that he's trying to be incendiary on purpose.
That's what I'm looking it up, and the first thing that popped up is he knew exactly what he was doing when he gave this incendiary interview.
I do think he was probably, I don't know, and maybe he does mean it. I have no idea. He might mean it, but still be delivering it with a glib attitude.
Do you think he just volunteered these thoughts?
Yeah, because they were there to talk about his movie, and he just started going off on nonsense.
Yeah, I feel like every day someone is coming out saying something like this, and it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like, what do you even say?
Well, it's what do you say? But it is also, I am interested in, he doesn't seem genuinely angry. He does seem to be having fun with the things he's saying.
Well, this one says, he says, I'm tired of white men being blamed for everything that's wrong in the world.
I guess I have to see him. But, you know, it brings up the question of even if he is being funny, quote, how do we deal with that? Because, of course, as a member of the Monty Python, he would probably be like, oh, I can't be funny anymore.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
There is a nuance. I'm not saying that he's right at all. But there is a nuance here that I want to, I would like to look at. I would love to see if there's footage of it, because I want to see how he delivers it. I still think that it is insulting and trivializing something that's important.
Yeah,
but even definitely. If he's making these statements as jokes for attention,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's not like a hero. I'm disappointed in a hero, but it's also kind of like a, yeah, no one needs this.
Well, that's my chill thing. Out. It's like, I just feel like, and this is the age we're living in, right? This is the, you know, the social media and the internet and, you know, whatever else is just at its worst. I just feel like, do we need to hear from everybody all the time?
Right.
Like, I'm just so tired of hearing everybody weigh in on everything every 5 seconds.
Right.
Like, you don't need to have an opinion on this, Terry Gilliam.
Right.
Like, and that's not to say, like, well, it is to say, like, you've probably said enough. Like, let's let other people
right.
talk you're for already a bit.
Or a filmmaker, you know. You have an expression in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like, you know.
I don't want to be one of those people who's like, you know, like, people give athletes a lot of a hard time and say, like, shut up and play.
Right.
But that's typically for a long time athletes weren't given a voice and were told right. to be quiet. But people like this guy have had the ear of the right. world for 30 years. So it's
right,
like
exactly.
now it's time to let somebody else speak up.
Right.
I don't know.
And it's just like the idea of like something as positive as Me Too, which is still happening and unfurling and the waves are still hitting the shore and it's still settling into the zeitgeist, to act like it's something that's bad or in fact has gone too far, I think is really wrong, because it hasn't gone far enough. It has to literally change the world, and it hasn't done that yet. So what do you mean, you know, what is your anger at it?
Right.
Like, who is it harming, really?
His friends.
Probably. Terry Gilliam, folks. Not John Cleese. Not Eric Idle.
It'd be funny if the other guys from... Actually, it'd probably be appropriate if the other guys from Monty Python were like, we don't condone that.
I don't know what the others have said.
What does Adam Driver have to say about this?
I have no idea.
Mr. Wren. Mr. Marriage Story.
Have you seen Marriage Story?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either.
I can't watch another Noah Baumbach movie about divorce that's going to make me really upset.
I know.
The Squid and the Whale did me in badly enough.
That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on.
That was
on.
Based on his parents' divorce. This one is based on his divorce.
But isn't it still written by him and his ex-wife?
Yeah, it's written by him. It's not written by his ex-wife. It's based
on... I thought Greta was... Oh, wait. No, he did it.
It's based on his divorce with Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, so he's still with Greta Gerwig.
Yes. Because he was married to Jennifer Jason Leigh.
I saw Laura Linney speak, and she was like, she was talking about Little Women in Marriage Story, and she was like, I made two movies.
You mean Laura Dern?
Yeah, Laura Dern, sorry.
A classic Laura Dern, Laura Linney mix-up.
Sorry, guys. Laura Dern is much more prolific. I saw Bruce Stern. I saw Daniel Stern speaking about a
Bruce
Home Alone
Stern is her father.
Reboot. Yeah, Bruce Dern is her father. So,
and her mother is the original Flo from Alice, the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, her mother. What's her name?
I have no idea.
She's kind of a big actress. She was the grandmother in Christmas Vacation.
She was like, yeah, I did two movies this year, and they were made by a husband and wife. Because she did Little Women, which is Greta Gerwig.
I still haven't seen that. I'm dying
so
to.
Good.
I've been told I'm a Joe, which I'll take.
Everyone wants to be a Joe.
Listen, I'll take it.
So moving on to our next story.
what's the ticker tape printing out?
Let's see here. Variety says that female directors are behind a record number of films in 2019. So says a study.
Okay.
Hollywood's glass ceiling may not be shattered, but it is slowly showing some cracks.
Okay.
The number of top-grossing films directed by women reached record levels in 2019, according to a new study by the USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative. Much of the past decade in the entertainment industry has been dominated by a debate about lack of opportunities for women, people of color, and members of the LGBTQ community. The findings seem to demonstrate that this wider public agitation had resulted in substantive change. Quote, we're finally seeing some traction, said Stacey L. Smith, one of the study's authors. Quote, a confluence of factors have led to a real moment in 2019. Over the last 12 months, the likes of Greta Gerwig, who directed Little Women, Lorraine Scarafara, who directed Hustlers, Olivia Wilde, who directed Booksmart, my pick for best movie of 2019, Lulu Wang, director of The Farewell, Melinda Matsoukas, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, Queen and Slim, helped propel the number of female-helmed movies to new heights. Some 10.6% of the 100 highest-grossing films of the year were made from female directors. In fact, two of the top 10 most successful global franchises, Frozen 2 and Captain Marvel, were co-directed by women. Smith believes there's a number of reasons for the improvement in the wake of the Me Too movement, the formation of Time's Up. Studios are facing more public pressure about greater scrutiny over hiring practices. So this is just a study, but it's a portent of something good, which is more diversity in the media. And I think more diversity in the media is important because the media is a big imaginary mirror that we look at it and it functions like a mirror would because it reflects back to us something that looks like reality. Mm-hmm. But it's not reality. It's an illusion.
Right.
So to create a sort of better culture or more inclusive culture that creates opportunities for everyone, you need parity in the media world. You need people to make movies that look like the people who watch movies. Mm-hmm. Like, someone I hate is Jerry Seinfeld. And he had, there was only a handful of African American characters on his sitcom, which is a sitcom that takes place in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And when asked about it, he would always say something like, well, we were there to be funny. We weren't there to fix the world's problems. But I always find that to be kind of a lame excuse because I mm-hmm. think actually, I think if you make media, you have to take that seriously because you're in charge of the big fake mirror.
Especially if you have a show that takes place in a diverse city.
Right.
Same could be said of Friends and Sex and the City. Neither one of those shows right. included any people of color either.
Right. So I think I think it's getting better. And,
yeah,
you know, it's good to have inclusivity in any workplace. But I think in the media, these are people that are creating our images, creating, you know, our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's absolutely great. There's been, I've read and heard for a while that, you know, like I've been listening, as long as I've been listening to podcasts and like listening to people who make media be interviewed, a lot of women filmmakers have said that they feel like there's more pressure on them to create movies that are high in quality and will bring in a lot of money. Otherwise, they won't get another chance.
Right. You have more. Whereas a male filmmaker can fail over and over
right.
and over again.
Hollywood's more forgiving of male filmmakers.
Right, right.
Which I think is probably true. Which is kind of why I wasn't as crazy about Booksmart as you were, but I did like it.
Uh-huh.
I know it didn't make a ton of money.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of, you know, kind of like critics deemed it to be a failure. And then I know like Olivia Wilde, right? She's the director. She kind of was like on social media saying like, please go see Booksmart so that we can empower, you know, women filmmakers. And it was just kind of, it made me feel sad. It's like, that's what she had to like kind of go on social media and like beg people to go see her movie.
Right. And then Sally, she had to go and play a really sexist character in Clint Eastwood's next movie.
Oh, I didn't
Richard
see that.
Richard Jewell. She played a real woman who existed, but she played a real person who was a reporter, but in the movie they make her an evil harlot who fucks people for information, something that there's no proof that the actual reporter ever did. But you know, his movies are so conservative.
Oh, Clint.
I actually liked that movie, other than
some of his movies are good.
All because he's a great director, it's just he's so fucked politically.
Not Jersey Boys, though. That's a bad movie.
No, I didn't even see Jersey Boys.
It's the only movie that is based on a musical that is like, what if we did this without it being a musical?
There's no music in it?
There is music in it, but it's not a musical in the way that a musical normally is. It's like the musical only exists. What is it? The diegesis? It's only like
in the world of the movie,
and it's never any full songs. It's like usually clips that are intercut with dialogue. It's basically like Clint Eastwood was like, I want to make a kind of like weighty biopic about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, I guess.
And I
want to base it on this fun, colorful musical, but I want to make it a kind of like dark, joyless period piece.
Sure, Clint.
Yeah,
whatever you want.
It sucks.
Do you want to go to Trailer Corner?
Let's.
We watched three interesting trailers. Did you put the fan on? It's getting toasty in here.
I told we're just both like burning up of a fever. This room is becoming like contagion. Can we please start with Uncaged?
I'd like to start nowhere else. Uncaged is its new name. It's been out for years under the name Prey,
which is a much better title.
Yeah. So
the first thing that caught me off guard,
Uncaged,
was I first saw this and I was like, all right, so this is a movie about a lion? And so then I opened it up and the YouTube link that you sent me, the subtitle is, it's an uncaged lion horror film. And I was like, is this a horror film for lions?
Yeah.
And then I was treated to this trailer, which at first I thought that the audio was not synced up with the actors' voices, but then as soon as I saw that there was an attack in the Vondelpark, I was like, oh my God, we're in Amsterdam, and this is a foreign film
that is
now being released in the United States,
right.
And it's about a killer lion on the loose in Amsterdam.
Yeah, you bet it is. It was made in the Netherlands. They're speaking Dutch in the original film.
Yes, and it's bad dubbing.
It's dubbed in...
horrible
dubbing. Oh, well, there's that dub where the guy opens up his cabinet of weapons and he sees the weapons. He's like, come to father or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be so much... It looks like a fun movie, but like...
It's Jaws with a lion.
That's exactly what it is. It's Jaws with a lion. Can't we just watch it with subtitles?
Or I know.
I guess it's just that people are too dumb for that.
I think it's been available on demand I think you have been able to get it with subtitles up to this point, but this is its like big American release.
I'm just thinking, if it came out a couple years ago, that may have been the summer that I took a trip to Amsterdam.
Was everybody
so
talking
I may
about
have crossed
that crazy lion
with
movie?
The lion. But it's just so funny because I was like watching the trailer and looking at all these iconic sites from Amsterdam and being like, oh man, I never think I would see a lion running down the streets mauling people for no reason. They kind of make it like he's pure evil.
It's Jaws. It's Jaws on the land. So there's a couple of moments that really struck me. One is somehow this lion gets on a subway car.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know, he fucks shit up. And there's a shot of people in the subway and the train goes by.
And they're like, oh, a lion.
They're like, is that a lion on that train? It looked like a lion on that train.
He's a really mean-looking lion,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's scary.
He looks like he's part... Is he fully CGI'd?
Or yeah,
part prosthetic?
CGI.
I mean, his face looks pretty bad. That's why I was wondering if it was like... I don't know, like a half and half kind of thing? Like they had a real lion and they CGI'd his face?
No way they had a real lion.
You never know. I mean, I'm just thinking of the horrible... possibilities, like the lion breaking into the Anne Frank house and
all these terrible things.
I'll bet you he swims in the little...
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, canals.
You think there's a joke like where he like goes to like like one of those coffee shops and like gets high?
Probably. 100%.
It looks like, to its credit, we're laughing at how ridiculous the idea is, but it looks like it knows it's silly.
It looks like Snakes on a Plane or Sharknado.
Right. It looks like it's meant to be crazy. The other scene that really got me was they're like, well, there's only one thing to do. We have to bring in the world's greatest lion hunter.
Oh, yeah. And he's a...
It's a man. It's a disabled man in a wheelchair.
It's a man in a wheelchair.
But then you see the constable and he's like, he's only got one leg.
Yeah. The voiceover is so incredible.
Woo! I cannot wait to see this movie.
Is it getting a wide release? I hope so, in 3D.
I don't know. Who knows where it's coming out? It might be coming straight to a Redbox near you.
Oh, I'm sure it's probably already on AOL on demand or whatever. It's on something that doesn't exist yet. It's on the Sprite streaming network.
Taste the rainbow. No, that's Skittles. I'm excited for this. It's going to be...
It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, as you know, in 2019, I was a big fan of the movie Crawl, which was Jaws with an alligator in a house.
But wasn't that... Oh, yeah. Wasn't that kind of like Lake Placid?
Lake Placid is definitely Jaws with an alligator. But what if it's in a house?
That makes it even better. Oh, man.
Yeah, and then there's two. I don't want to ruin it for you.
Oh, boy. All
right. It's so good. Crawl. I think Quentin Tarantino said Crawl was his favorite movie of the year, which is such a Quentin Tarantino thing to say.
I hate him so much.
It's cool when I say it. It's actually not my favorite movie at all of the year, but I had fun with it. So that's one movie, Uncaged. So the other two are more serious movies. Well, not really, but they're not Dutch. So what are the? So what is the other one you want to talk
about?
The
other one was A Promising Young Woman.
Yes.
With Carrie Mulligan.
Yes.
Looking like she's going to give her career best performance.
Even better than the Blink episode of Doctor Who. It's one of the most famous episodes of Doctor Who.
She's on that?
It's an episode where the Doctor only appears in one scene. It's very famous.
No, I didn't know
it's
anything
It's where the
about
Weeping
that.
Angels first
appeared. I know her from The Great Gatsby, and I know her from looking like Michelle Williams.
Yes, we all know her for that.
And no, she looks really great. Like, she's giving it her all in this performance. As a woman who... it looks like she's committed her life to getting revenge, and it looks like she was sexually assaulted in college or medical school.
She wanted to be a doctor.
And now the trailer kind of makes it seem like every weekend she goes out to a club, pretends to be drunk, has
waits for a nice guy to come over to her,
take her home, try to assault her, and then, I don't know, does she kill them? Like, there's a lot of mystery in the trailer. Does she torture them? Extort them?
You see her open up her little, her little black book, and she's like, you see, I don't know what you call that, like the marks, like 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, then, she's tallying.
Right, you tallies, right, and the fifth one goes through. Some are in red and some are in black, and I'm guessing the reds she kills.
Oh, my God.
But it opens in an interesting way where it's her drunk at a bar. Was it Adam Brody? Who is it?
It's Adam Brody.
And
yes.
And what's great is they are quote unquote nice guys. Like, he's not like Mr. Creep, but he's like, oh, he brings her home and then he goes.
He like gets on top of her.
Right. And then she's like, what are you doing? And then like you see her, she's clearly not drunk. And she's like, I asked you, what are you doing?
Yeah, that part really was like, whoa.
It gets you.
Because she just sits up and she just like the whole drunk act goes away. And she's like, I asked, what are you doing?
Right. Then you see her with another guy who's Mick Lovin.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I just felt like we had a connection. And she's like, really? What's my favorite color? And then she's like, what's my name?
Yeah. It's really great. And then you hear guys be like, you don't understand. Like, it's a guy's worst fear to be accused of something like this.
Yeah,
it's just like, what do you think a woman's worst fear is? And we see...
towards the end, she kind of goes into like full Harley Quinn kind of mode.
I think she goes and just kills a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Well, we see, I guess, a little bit of her backstory. She went to medical school. One of her classmates was Allison Brie.
Who didn't believe her when she said she was assaulted.
And the dean...
Or at least said she didn't believe her.
And the dean was...
Connie Britton. She of the most magic hair.
Yeah, and even she didn't believe her. She was like, well, you know, these are serious allegations, and that's why she left.
Oh, and then you hear Connie Britton say, we had to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
And then she says, after all these years, I was hoping that your answer would have changed.
Right. At the end, she's dressed as like a naughty nurse with like a very brightly colored wig, but... She's got like a bag of like tools. It looks like she's gonna really murder some people.
Yeah, that's the trailer itself builds to something crazy.
Yeah, it seems like it started off looking like a dark comedy, but I'm wondering if it's like horror.
It looks to be dark comedy slash horror, I think. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm wondering how explicit it gets. You know, there's a famous Japanese horror film from maybe, I guess over 10 years ago, called Audition.
Oh, God, please.
Which is, it's like a...
It's like one of the most disturbing movies of all time, right?
Right. If you're familiar with the idea of the male gaze, which is the movie camera, the eye of the movie camera or the eye of media is, it's adjacent to the eye of the male characters in the film and patriarchal culture, and it's always looking at women. It's objectifying, not subjectifying them. So it's about a guy who, like, it starts off as a romantic comedy. It's a Japanese film, and it's a guy who wants a new girlfriend. So he's like, I'm going to audition girls and pretend like it's a movie. And he finds this, like, meek young girl, and he's like, this is the girl for me. And then when he brings her home, it becomes torture porn. She paralyzes him and then, like, cuts his legs off with a fucking wire. It's just, it's so hard to watch, but it's this. People love it because it's this perfect reversal of the male gaze, or it's not a reversal, it's a sort of revenge of the gaze. It's like the gaze fighting back. I saw the trailer when I saw the movie Uncut Gems, and there were some young guys next to me, and they seemed very sensitive, which I look back and I go, oh, son, I was there. You know what I mean? Like, I could see they were, like, film
merits. There's a line in the trailer where he's like, you guys, you ruin everything. I guess he's talking about, like, women ruin everything.
Yeah. And so one of the guys next to me, one of the boys next to me was like, oh, God, I think it's going to be a rape scene. I can't watch this, blah, blah, blah. And then when she comes up and she's like, I asked you, what are you doing? The guys were like, whoa. And, like, everybody, like, I could feel in the movie, like, a hero moment of like,
oh, when you said sensitive, I thought you meant like the guys were like defensive
over no, they seem like sweet boys.
Sweet little boys. All right.
No, they seem like nice, you know,
good boys.
I don't know, you know that scene in 21 Jump Street where they go back to high school undercover and like Channing Tatum uses the F word and one of the cool kids is like, whoa, man, don't talk like that. Like sometimes I feel that way about kids. I think like,
I work with kids and I feel that way. Definitely.
Like a lot of them are very time.
Yeah, they're pretty
better. They're just better than we were.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be really fun. I'd also like, it's interesting to see her do this because it's been a,
I've always thought that she was good and this looks like it's going to be like a career defining performance if it does well enough.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, she looks amazing. Whether or not the movie itself is good, like if it's well directed or well written or whatever, either way I could tell just from the trailer that she gives an amazing performance.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think it's gonna be very good.
Yeah,
and I wonder if it's gonna upset people.
Oh, I'm 100% sure it will, but then again, what doesn't?
But that's
people are upset by The Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, right. People are gonna be upset.
I'm excited for people to be upset by it. Okay, so the last trailer we watched was,
I don't remember another trailer.
New Mutants.
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't remember it.
So this is an interesting trailer because the first trailer for this film came out in 2017. And did you see that one way back then?
No.
All right. So New Mutants.
Maybe I did and I just forgot because it was equally forgettable.
All right. New Mutants was a comic book.
No, I know that. Yeah.
It's a spinoff of the X-Men.
Yeah.
New Mutants is actually where Deadpool first appeared.
Yes, I knew that as well.
So they made this as a horror movie.
That's what was so confounding.
And in 2017, they put out a trailer, and it was like coming out in 2018. And then it got pushed because they didn't want it to open up the same time as Deadpool 2 and Dark Phoenix, which was the other X-Men
movie. So this movie is 3 years old.
Yes. Okay. This movie's been on a shelf for 3 years.
Okay.
And then when they pushed it back, they were like, we're going to reshoot it. We're going to make it scarier.
Why are they going so scary?
Is the comic scary? No, it's not. The comic is a superhero comic.
I mean, they're really selling it as a horror film.
It's based on one arc from the comic.
Okay.
Supposedly, at the time,
The school?
No, it's not Xavier's school.
It kind of looks like Xavier's school.
Well, it's a school, but it's not Xavier's school.
Okay, and it looks like it's run by a woman who is...
Looks like she wants to, like, steal their power or some shit like that.
She's a real... who's that, like, woman who comes into Hogwarts and is, like, evil?
Umbridge.
Umbridge, yeah. She's a real Dolores Umbridge.
It seems a little bit like the orphanage from Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, torturing the kids and stuff. And I think, Get Out had come out and Stranger Things, and I think they thought, like, this would be a different path for the X-Men franchise. And remember, this was when it was still 20th Century Fox.
Well, that was
going to
be my
it.
Question, because the trailer starts with a 20th Century Fox logo, and I was like, if this is X-Men, shouldn't this now be Disney?
It is, though. Now it is.
But it doesn't say Disney. It
because
says 20th Century Fox.
Because 20th Century Fox still exists as a label. And 20th Century Fox did technically make it.
Okay.
But Disney's still involved, because I think Disney's who's putting this out. Because for 3 years, people thought, this thing's never going to happen. Because they said they were going to reshoot it, and then those reshoots never happened. And then Hollywood was like, okay, this thing's dead in the water. And now some people postulate the head of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Kevin Feige, who was the furthest removed from this movie originally. Now he looked at it and he was like, I actually like this. And they're releasing the original movie that they made 3 years ago without any changes.
Really?
Yeah. So this is the movie that it always was going to be. And either Disney's just dumping it, or they have some faith in it, because the even though it was originally made as connected to the X-Men movies of the 20th Century Fox.
So it would have been like X-Men New Mutants.
Right. Okay. But now the press says it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Now, are you excited for this?
I like the idea of... I like playing with genre. I like the idea of a horror movie with the mutants.
I think that... Yeah. All right. So if I think this is my fault, is that I know the cheese stands alone, and I'm probably the only person who feels this way, but like the minute I just see the Marvel logo, I'm just like, I'm checked out. I don't give a fuck. Uh-huh. I'm so tired of it. I'm so fucking tired of it.
Yeah.
but I will say
that
it being a horror movie did make me feel like, oh, that's different.
Right.
But then wasn't there also that movie Brightburn or something that was like supposed to be like a superhero horror movie?
Yeah, it was like, what if Superman were evil?
Yeah, that was a bomb, right?
Yeah, but I liked it a lot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe I'll see it and I'll like it. I mean, I like X-Men. I don't not like these movies. I just feel like
there's too many of them.
There's too many of them. I just feel right. Like I can't catch my breath.
I totally understand. Yeah, I'm not super excited for it. Me and the rest of the world are shocked that it's coming out, because the new trailer dropped this week, really unceremoniously, and people
which
like,
doesn't bode well,
right?
Though.
And people are like, holy shit, this movie's actually still around. But calling it part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is interesting, because remember, mutants have never been part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe because of the old deal, but now they can be. There's even all these rumors that they're making a new Doctor Strange movie with Benedict Cumberbatch, and it is going to be a multiverse where you see different universes, and supposedly they're going to use that as the way of bringing Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool into Marvel Cinematic Universe, because they want Deadpool, but they also feel like he's the there's no other actor who could do it, like he is Deadpool.
Yeah.
So the rumor is he's going to come into that movie, and then they're going to make more Deadpool movies, but it's not going to be sequels to Deadpool 1 and 2. It's like Deadpool in a different universe, which is fine because he breaks the fourth wall anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm if they're just throwing it away, then it's going to suck. But
I think it's either one of two things. Either they're just dumping it and it's going to suck, or they feel like it's good and they're trying to position it to be like a sleeper hit.
That's what I think is happening, because I don't know. There's something about the way the trailer came out. There's something about the way the trailer is cut. There's something about the way that the press is referring to it as the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Makes me feel like I've seen them try to bury things before, and it doesn't feel like they're trying to bury it.
Well, if they really tried to bury it, they would have just released it straight to Disney Plus or something.
Right, exactly. The fact that it's getting a theatrical release, the fact that it is the original version not fucked with, is also interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
When do you think that's going to happen, by the way? When do you think we're going to get something dropped to Disney Plus that's totally unannounced and surprise? I feel like that's going to happen.
Oh, it could be this year.
Any day now. Yeah.
Who knows?
Since, like, the whole world is tuning into Disney Plus now.
Yeah. Who knows when that's going to be? It uses a... And we've seen this a lot of times before. It uses a cool cover of... Another Brick in the Wall.
Yeah.
Which is like, this reminds me of like Disturbing Behavior from like 1997 or whatever it was.
Movie. I mean, it's probably not a great movie, but I enjoyed it.
It was great.
That was originally supposed to be like a modern update of The Stepford Wives.
Right.
Speaking of.
And then there was The Faculty. We've done
The Faculty. The Faculty's like good, actually. I think The Faculty holds up. I watched it like last year.
Really?
Yeah. Not to go back, but I forgot to mention that one of the coolest parts of the Promising Young Woman trailer is that violin cover of Toxic by Britney Spears. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, but anyway, yeah.
That is good. I'm glad you went back for that because that was something that I liked. All right, I really got to pee. Let's take a break. We'll come back for the chill sesh.
Okay.
Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno.
I'm Anthony. Oh, I'm so sorry.
You stepped all over.
Welcome to PCMC.
I'm
Anthony Bongiorno.
I'm Mike Bongiorno. Welcome to PCMC. This is the chill sesh. This is where we just have unstructured dialogue. Huh?
I feel like we were already doing that.
So, what you doing? What you seeing? What you watching? What you reading?
I'm watching Schitt's Creek.
What are you up to in Schitt's Creek?
All right, so I have, like I said earlier, I'm not really good with keeping up with things. I'm the person, the idiot, that'll start a show, watch two episodes, tell everybody else to watch it. Then they'll all watch the whole thing, and then they'll be like, oh, you're right, it was great. And then I'll be like, oh, I still only watched the first two episodes.
That's me, because I recommended Schitt's Creek on this very podcast, and I stopped watching after, like, season two.
Yeah,
I get sick of things, you know?
I do, too. I'm really bad with stuff like that. I remember when Stranger Things came out. I was one of the first people on board with Stranger Things. I watched like the first two episodes and I told everybody I knew, like, you have to watch Stranger Things. I never even finished season one. I still haven't finished season one because I don't know. Sometimes I just stop caring about things really quickly.
Me too.
Like, I kind of feel like Stranger Things, I get it. I got it. I don't need any more.
I completely agree. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm enjoying Schitt's Creek. I started watching it a long time ago when nobody knew about it.
Uh-huh.
Humble brag. Oh, hipster brag. And then I recommended it to a few people. Then what really got me into it again is I went with a friend to see them, to see the cast speak.
Oh, really?
Even though I'm not... I really didn't, you know, I was a fan of what I had seen, but I didn't know a ton about the show. I went to see them in Brooklyn live and they did like a Q&A and that was really, really fun. So then I was like, I really got to watch this show. And what's funny is I feel like the whole world is paying attention to it right now, which is odd because
it's the
last season is starting now. But yeah, even like coworkers of mine and even some of my students, like all of a sudden are like, do you watch the show Schitt's Creek?
His daughter is in it too.
Yeah, she's the waitress, Twyla. But I love, I'm just enjoying it a lot right now. I'm enjoying that there's a lot of it to watch. Like it's just like one episode, then the next, then the next, then the next, because
yeah,
I'm so
back
behind.
Into it.
And I really love Moira. She's my favorite character.
Oh yeah, she's great. Moira, you love a Rose. Character like that.
I love Jenna's my favorite character from 30 Rock.
You love a sort of, how would you describe it? A sort of self-involved,
yeah. Self-involved, self-absorbed,
delusional
woman. Yeah,
yeah. Who's like?
That's why I watch The Housewives.
Yeah, that's your thing.
I love her. She's so good, and she was so funny live.
Really?
They had people come up to like they played some games.
Yeah,
the whole thing was hosted by David, who's really Dan Levy, or Levy. And he's really like
talk about a snack.
I know he's really the brainchild behind the whole
thing.
It's
yeah.
His whole thing. And he like was hosting and he had people come up and do like trivia, like
yeah.
Schitt's Creek trivia against the cast members. And she just really cracked me up because she was like, some young woman came up and she was like, what's your name, dear? And she was like, oh, my name's Angie or whatever. And she's like, Angie, I'm going to wipe the floor with you. Just, like her delivery was just so perfect. And it was really funny. And so she was really
like
good.
Improv.
They're all improv people. They were all really funny. They all independently did an impression of Dan, which is funny because then he kept being like, I don't talk like that. And they were all like the woman who plays the sister, Alexis, she was talking about when he called to offer her the part. She's like, so he called and he said, hi, I really want to thank you for coming in. And she's like, and then he took a pause for 6 months. And then he said, so how would you like to play my sister on the show? And then he was like, why is everybody doing my voice like that? It was really good.
That's fantastic.
But that's what I'm enjoying is just catching up on that.
That's fantastic. I think I'm trying to remember where I left off. I think I watched the first three seasons.
I'm just starting season three.
That's the thing with the binge model, which is like I watched the first three seasons in like a week. And then you're just done with it. And then you
feel satisfied. Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, I don't need to go back to this. There's no
stakes or anything. Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to really go back to the idea of weekly releases because – you know,
Mandalorian's weekly.
Right. And the whole Baby Yoda thing would not have grown the way it did if it weren't weekly.
Is Baby Yoda still... We're still doing that?
Baby Yoda memes are a big part of my life.
I know. I feel like...
The toys are
It's coming to yet. Its end soon.
Oh, well, yeah. Because the show's
I'm
over.
Starting to feel like... He's everywhere. He's like our generation's Bart Simpson.
Yes, yes.
Eat my shorts.
Chicky Nuggies.
Remember that? Well, because what's funny is he has a whole personality that the internet has given him that
right,
he doesn't
like he
have.
He talks
in the
a
show.
Certain way.
Like Chicky Nuggies. He doesn't ever
Chalky
say,
milk.
Say that. Yeah. I do like, of all the memes, I think my favorite one is the one where he's just looking up.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like my dog when I'm about to go out without him and he's just like looking up at me. Like, that's the cutest one.
Yeah. I love that when Mattel made the first, they made an advertisement for the first doll and they put it off a pre-order, which crashed Walmart's website. In the commercial for the doll, it's all the meme images.
It's
fascinating.
So meta.
It's a fascinating thing. What's happened with?
Well, because it's like you talked about on the podcast with Janine. Like they didn't anticipate that he was going.
Which
to
is amazing.
Be, yeah, I guess. I don't.
I
know.
Mean, for the big machine that is Disney.
Yeah.
To
know that he's cute, and to not anticipate that people were gonna go crazy for him.
Well, what you can't anticipate is memes.
Well, that's the thing, and then you have Babu Frick, who I love, but I feel like he was engineered to be a cute little toy.
Right.
And that didn't take off, even though I do love Babu Frick and his hey.
Right, right.
But just,
Baby Yoda
it's hard
is,
to
Baby Yoda
these things.
And protecting him at all costs is what Mandalorian's about.
Yeah. It's an interesting one because I feel like as the show goes on and we learn more about Baby Yoda, those memes are going to be ruined. Because eventually he's going to get a name, I think. And
probably.
It's not going to be Baby Yoda.
Maybe. I don't know. I asked Janine, do you think he'll ever speak?
Yeah. Yoda speaks. Yaddle.
Did
Yaddle
speak?
Is the craziest.
I don't think Yaddle ever spoke.
Well, Yaddle.
She could.
She was sitting on the council, so she must have spoken.
She's never said anything.
Yaddle is a crazy ass character.
Yeah. Yoda in a blonde
Yoda
wig.
In a crazy wig.
But maybe, you know, we never knew anything about that character, that species.
I'm waiting for Yaddle to get a spinoff.
I'm waiting for them to go to like the Yoda planet and there's just a bunch of Yodas and all walks of life.
I'm sure we'll get there very soon.
Yeah. There's also people who and this is more rumors that believe that it's going to tie into the larger story, which I don't want it to do.
I don't want everything to have to tie in. This is what ruined the Rise of Skywalker.
But you see,
like,
the
I've
reason
heard
they
that
want
too.
Baby
like,
Yoda,
Baby Yoda
is he's the reason. He's what they use him to bring back the Emperor.
And then I was reading like a fan theory that Baby Yoda is like a reincarnation of Yoda. Like,
no, that I don't believe.
I don't believe it either, but I feel like if enough people on the internet wanted that to happen...
Because we see Yoda's Force Ghost in The Last Jedi. I don't know. Reincarnation's not a thing we've seen in Star Wars.
Yoda has one of the best lines ever in Last Jedi, and it's one of the things that they ignore in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Which is... what it's like... Because I'm a teacher, and when he says...
we are what they grow beyond.
We are what they grow beyond. And they're sitting there watching the fire of all the Jedi techs burning. That's a great scene.
And then JJ runs in and he puts out the fire. And he's like, no, the Jedi!
Did you ever see the meme where it's like you threw out your TV dinner's box without reading how many minutes? And then it's Luke going, the sacred text! How many minutes you should keep it in the microwave?
I don't want to go back to Star Wars, but I love that. I love the moment in fucking The Last Jedi when he's like, forget the Sith, forget the Jedi.
I
know.
I really do love that so much.
I know. Anyway.
Anyway.
I've been watching a lot of Disney Plus. I've been...
Disney Plus is, let's face it, just like Netflix, it's like a cruise ship buffet in that it's not all the best quality, but you love the fact that there are so many options and there's so much of it.
Right.
Like, it's mostly, it's mostly crap.
And what's interesting is I think people, as much as some people are cynical, and rightly so, I think there's just as many people that like brands, that like brand, you know, it, you know, like, you could say, oh, feels Apple's Disney-ish. Evil and they fucking use sweatshops and slave labor,
but we're all buying
people, right, and people still line up for it. I think people love fucking Disney. They're like, yeah, it's Disney. It's like they feel like they've subscribed to their childhood or something.
I'm looking,
I mean, I think that's why I think it's smart that they're doing a new Lizzie McGuire show. They're tying into those things.
It's, they're trying to make, and this makes sense, streaming, they're trying to model streaming after like what the specialty cable networks used to be,
right,
where it was like, you're gonna find content that's specific only to Disney, and this is just like the updated version of the Disney Channel.
Right.
What's going to happen is Netflix and Hulu, which were like, they just kind of had a little of everything, are going to fall by the wayside because every single company, organization, or whatever media company is going to have its own streaming service.
Or they're going to, and this is what's already happening, they're going to be forced into their own brand.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas like Netflix is not a place where you get stuff, it's where you get Netflix stuff.
Right.
Which you already...
So it's just going to be the cable model, except we're going to be all paying way more because we're going to be paying a million subscription fees.
But they'll figure out a way to bundle it all and stuff.
Well, they already bundle, like Disney Plus is bundled with ESPN and Hulu.
Well, when you own a lot
Didn't Disney Plus just buy Seinfeld?
That I don't know.
I think I've read that. So it was either Seinfeld or some other show is leaving Hulu and going to Disney Plus. No, Friends is going...
Friends is leaving. I don't know if they're going to Disney Plus, but Friends is leaving.
I think Friends is going to Peacock. Which is the
NBC one?
But I think that the NBC streaming service is taking back Friends.
Okay, that makes sense.
Friends is definitely gone from Netflix, though.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
I saw a funny headline that was like, now that Friends is gone from Netflix, kids will have to watch a good show.
Yeah, the kids love Friends.
They do. They love Friends.
It's so weird. They all, like all my students.
But it's like when I was a kid, I loved fucking like... Three's Company.
Yeah.
I think they probably have a feeling of, you know, like, I'm into something cool and old.
Yeah. You know what else they love? They love Grey's Anatomy.
Do they really?
Yes.
Well, that's still on, though.
But what's weird is it's been on for a million years. And it's just like a soapy procedural that they all love.
Yeah.
It's weird.
That is interesting.
Friends, man. I used to love Friends when I was younger.
I loved it when we all loved it. I loved it in the 90s.
I bet if I went back and watched it again, it'd probably be dated, but I'd still enjoy it. I like Seinfeld. I still watch old Seinfeld episodes and often and like them a lot. I like Curb more, but I like Seinfeld.
I like Seinfeld. I think what goes against Seinfeld
is Jerry.
Well, yes.
I mean, he's my least...
That's not what I was going to say.
He's always been my least favorite character.
I was going to say it being rated so highly... kind of works against it.
If it came out now, it wouldn't be the phenomenon that it was.
No, because I feel like we've got a lot of stuff that's better than it now.
Right, and there's just also like a million other options.
Right, exactly.
I mean, at the time that it was on, it dominated network TV prime time.
Right.
But there's nothing does that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like the last big show like that dominated prime time was like American Idol.
Well, I mean, it's not for us, but... Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, but Big Bang
was
Theory,
a genuine phenomenon.
If you look at the numbers that Big Bang Theory got, though, compared to like even a mediocre show 20 years earlier.
But you could also then say, let's compare the numbers of Seinfeld to Green Acres.
Yeah,
back you know when, I mean? There, when there were three fucking choices.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Speaking of Green Acres and bringing it back to Disney Plus, I watched The Rescuers.
Regular or Down Under?
Regular style.
Was that the first time you've ever seen it?
First time I've ever seen it.
Did you like it?
Starring Eva Gabor.
Yeah, I've never seen
Bob Newhart. It is, all right.
It sounds like a cartoon for old people, the elderly.
All right, this is gonna be a hot take for some people. So hold on.
Did you find it erotic?
No, it's not at all. I was going to go. Disney movies all have a certain level of boringness. I love Disney animated movies.
Especially during that era, though. That was a rough era, right. The 70s, for right. Disney animation.
Here's what I liked about it. It was that pre-Little Mermaid, post-Walt death, where it was dark for no reason.
Yes, like Aristocats.
Yeah. I liked it. They went really cheap with the animation.
They did.
But I like it because it makes it grittier. Like, I don't know if you've...
Like that shitty Robin Hood movie with the bears that reuses a bunch of footage from Snow White.
Right. I haven't watched that yet. I tell you... Oh, wait. I'll get to this next. You haven't watched it. It begins... There's a cold open where there's a little girl who's, like, kidnapped, and she, like, writes on a piece of paper, "Please come help me," and, like, puts it in a bottle and, like, sends it into the ocean. And then it gets to the rescuers, and they rescue her. And it's, like... Whew, just dark way to open up this movie. It's like,
is it fun?
It's got fun moments, and the bad guy's pretty wild. She's kind of a Cruella de Vil. Well, originally she was gonna be Cruella de Vil, and then they changed it.
What a missed opportunity!
I know, but I'd say a good 70% of it works.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's. But I just like that darkness. Something else I watched that I genuinely really liked was Sword in the Stone.
Sword in the Stone's a great movie. And, you know, I never watched that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I showed it
based on the first paragraph of The Legend of King Arthur.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's like nothing.
It's one little entry in the whole
right.
thing.
It's him as a kid being trained by Merlin, and then there's none of him. There's no Knights Around Table. There's no Holy Grail.
No, but it's super fun. The first time I ever saw it was... I just showed clips of it to a class. I was teaching a British literature class, and we were doing Arthurian legend. And I showed them like a clip of it. And then I was like, this is fun. Let me just watch this whole thing on my own. And I really liked it.
Yeah. I like that Merlin is a fourth wall breaking character because he can see through time.
He's a real like proto genie.
He really is. From Aladdin. Well, he even comes back from Bermuda.
Yeah, wearing Bermuda shorts. Right, and he's Hawaiian like,
he went to the future.
Hawaiian shirt, yeah.
Like he says something about like, Knights of the Round Table, and he's like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Oh," and then he says something later on about like a movie, and he's like, "What's a movie?" And he's like, "Oh, it's kind of like TV."
Yeah.
There's like a lot of that shit. The bad guy in it is also awesome. What's her name? The fucking witch.
Oh yeah.
She's fucking great when they have that fight. It's a weird movie. See, some of the Disney movies that aren't too plotty, I like. The ones that are just like, this is just gag, end.
Yeah.
Basically, Sword of the Stone is Merlin meets Arthur as a kid, and he moves into his house. And he's like, "I'm going to teach you because education is important." And then basically the same thing happens five times. He turns Arthur into an animal. They sing a song and then whatever. First Arthur's a fish, and then Arthur's a squirrel, and you meet those sexy horny squirrels. And then finally you meet Madam Mim at the very end. Like, she's not even the villain through the whole thing. She's at the very end.
It's very episodic.
Right. And then Mim and Merlin have a wizard's duel, which is really great.
Great, yeah.
And then it fucking ends. He pulls the sword from the stone and it ends.
That's adorable that the animation is really well done when he's trying to pull it out, and then he eventually gets out. You see like his little feet slipping and kicking first.
Yeah.
It's just really memorable, like really well done animation.
I was surprised how much I really liked it.
You know what's a great 60s live action Disney movie?
What?
The original That Darn Cat.
That Darn Cat.
With Haley Mills.
I like that movie.
It's a great movie.
I liked both That Darn Cats.
I wasn't as big of a fan of the Christina Ricci one because I had already been a fan of the old one. And then I remember I begged our mom to take me to see it. And then I remember being like, I don't know, this is too different. But I guess now if I watched it, I'd like it.
Yeah.
With Dougie Fresh as the cop, the detective.
And they were like, it was like TDC.
Yeah, TDC. That's
because
it was
cool.
Yeah. DC was DC is the cat's name.
Right, Darn Cat.
It's just a fun movie.
Well, the original one had Frank Gorshin as the kidnapper.
Yes.
The guy who played the Riddler.
Yes.
And he was fucking fantastic.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Something that people
underrated.
Yes, but something that people are now becoming aware of, or maybe a whole new generation has become aware of it, is how low quality the live action Disney movies were.
Oh, like, yeah.
Fucking pre Hocus Pocus or like pre Pirates of the Caribbean.
You know what's another good one that's really like, it was a big hit too, and it's pretty like low, like shoddy, low budget. The original Jodie Foster Freaky Friday.
I haven't seen that.
It's charming as hell. It's a really fun watch.
Really?
And I really like the Jamie Lee Curtis one, too. But the original one from the 70s with Jodie Foster is really well done. But it's like, it looks like it was made on the cheap.
Really?
But it's good.
Yeah, the Disney live-action movies for a long time were, like, not great. But I like the original, like, Parent Trap.
Yeah, I do, too. Parent
Trap.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a classic.
I saw one recently, which came out... it came out after Star Wars, like, I think the next year, 78, and it's The Black Hole.
Okay.
Which people say... The sort of narrative behind the movie is that, like, this was them trying to cash in on Star Wars... Which maybe in some abject way it was, but it's nothing like Star Wars. It's not thrilling. It's more like fucking 2001: A Space Odyssey. It is so. I fell asleep during the middle of it.
Sounds like a dream, but a thrill.
But it's also, it's a marvel because you look at it and it's like, this is so fucking weird. In the end, the bad guy goes to hell, and it's like hell. He's in like a hell dimension. It's so fucking weird. But
is
then
it
there
for
are
kids?
Like. No, no. Right? Okay. Roddy McDowell's in it. It's weird. It's a fucking... That's the thing. Like, a lot of... See, this is what I like about Disney, which is, like, there's this sort of idea of Disney is, like, squeaky clean and, like, perfectly polished. But when you actually dig into it, a lot of it's weird and bad and sometimes yeah. dark and doesn't fucking work yeah. at all. Like, when I read...
A lot of the pre-Renaissance stuff is
yeah.
like that.
And when I read The Animated Man, which is something I talked about in the last episode, I was surprised at how many of what we think of the classic movies as complete failures. Like, Pinocchio was a failure. Cinderella was a failure.
Yeah, Pinocchio almost bankrupted the whole studio.
Right. Dumbo, which they thought was, like, not a big deal, and they made on the cheap, that became a big hit. To their surprise, like, they would constantly back the wrong horse.
Yes.
And they were constantly, like, playing catch up. Even, like, even into the 80s, like, if you watch the documentary, The Story of Imagineering, they talk about, like, how Euro Disney fucking, like,
oh, that
really
was a
flopped.
Huge flop.
Yeah, like.
Now known as Disneyland Paris.
Right.
Where I've been. It's actually really nice.
You went to Disneyland Paris?
Yeah, I went there.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I went to Paris. I spent the day there.
Did you go on their version of the Haunted Mansion with Vincent Price?
Yes.
Something Manor.
Haunted Manor or something?
No, I think there's alliteration there.
I don't know, but I definitely went on it. If it was there, I went on it. I honestly am not remembering that, but if it's there, the park is only so big.
Right, right. It's small, right?
And I love the Haunted Mansion, so I definitely went on it if it was open.
I would love to go to Disneyland Paris. I'd love to go to...
Tokyo Disney?
Tokyo is the one where it's called, like, Mayhem Manor because okay. they take ghosts very seriously, so it's like just like a weird, like, sci-fi... Okay.
Disneyland Paris maybe just has a regular Haunted Mansion.
No, there's...
I remember some... Now it's...
Vincent Price does the voice of it, which okay. he doesn't do the American one. Okay. And, like, it's about... It's much... It's got a much more... It's scary and it's got a more cohesive narrative of, like, a woman is in love with a guy and her father kills the man she
loves.
On
the wedding day?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember some of the rides being very different. Some for the better, some for the worse. And now I just... I can't remember...
I
remember the Peter Pan ride being a lot bigger in Disneyland Paris.
Phantom Manor.
Okay.
Phantom Manor okay. is the name of the Paris version of Haunted Mansion.
I feel like in Disneyland Paris, and maybe this is just me, but maybe I could be wrong, but I think there's much more of an emphasis on the princesses in Disneyland Paris.
What's cool is there's in Tokyo Disneyland, they've got a second park called Disney Sea.
Yes.
Like Disneyland and Disney Sea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know that there are certain areas of Disneyland Paris where, at least when I was there like 5 years, 6 years ago, where they're smoking allowed. And
sure.
I just remember like we were walking by and like watching these French locals like smoking and just like being like, oh, fucking Disney with their kids running around, like with enjoying the park.
They've got the ears on and they're like, oh, yeah. I fucking hate this.
Yeah, but I had a great time there. I mean, it's Disney. I mean, it's going
to
be fun.
I'd love to go see the other parks.
It's amazing how easy it is to get to from downtown Paris.
Really?
Like, you just get on the metro and you ride the metro for like 40 minutes and you're there.
The French government...
And they say Parc Disneyland, and that's where you get off and you're right in Disneyland.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's like getting on a subway in New York for 40 minutes and getting off in Disney World. Like,
oh,
that's
okay.
kind of like what it feels like. Like, you go take a trip to Paris and then... you'd spend a day in Disney.
Well, the French government was all behind it. It was the French people that fucking were not behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, were throwing eggs at it. And they show that in the Disney Plus documentary. Yeah. Like, boy, was this a big fucking failure. Yeah,
and when it was Euro Disney.
Right. That was a good rebrand.
Yeah, that was a good rebrand, Disneyland Paris.
I guess I want to talk a little bit about Uncut Gems because I teased it in the first act.
Go ahead. I have not seen it yet, but I want to see it. How's Idina?
Adele Dazeem.
Oh, yeah. How is she?
Adele Dazeem, the wickedly talented.
That's the weirdest moment ever.
Adele Dazeem. Adina's great in it.
I feel like she's not getting enough attention because it's all going to Adam Sandler.
They're all great in it.
And there's a real athlete in it, right?
There's a lot of weird
and
shit.
And isn't he, like, really good?
Yeah, he's good.
It's who is it? Is it?
Oh,
is it Kyrie Irving?
They call him. This shows how much of a nerd I am when it comes to, like, sports. He calls him KG. So,
I'm Kevin Garnett.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, he's good in it as himself. You know who else is in it as himself? As, like, a cameo, I guess. The fucking dad from Good Times.
Really?
The sitcom. It's just random. He's like, oh yeah, my neighbor's the dad from fucking Good Times.
That's weird.
It's super weird. Adam Sandler is amazing in it. Every once in a while, Adam Sandler will make a good movie, and you're like, wow, he can be good. Just try all the time, man.
But that's not his bread and butter. His bread and butter is those Netflix comedies.
Those bullshit fucking movies.
He's kind of like an Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Where, and I feel like Eddie Murphy is right now enjoying a lot of reverence again. But Eddie Murphy had that thing where, like, he had a bunch of shitty movies, and then he'd have a dramatic turn or make a good movie, and people would be like, oh, Eddie Murphy's back. Maybe Eddie Murphy will get the Oscar. But then he would release Norbit, and it'd be like, oh, fuck Eddie Murphy.
I feel like Sandler's done it more, though. I feel like Sandler has more of those. Because Eddie, I mean, what does Eddie have? He's got Dreamgirls.
The big thing was there was a lot of buzz that he was going to be nominated for an Oscar for Dreamgirls, and then he released Norbit like a month later, and the Academy was like, no, thank you.
Right. But with Sandler, you've got...
Well, what have you got for Sandler? Punch Drunk Love, Punch Funny Drunk People, Love. And this. I mean, what else is there where he's really good?
Some people would put Spanglish in that.
I've never seen Spanglish.
Neither have I. But some people put it in there. He's fantastic in this. It is...
And he's got some good comedies where he's good.
Since you want to see it, and since I don't want to ruin it for the listener, I'll just give you a little bit of like how it felt, which is, all right, you've heard the overly used term edge of your seat. I was literally on the edge of my seat. Like people, it's the most tense movie I've ever seen. Like,
was it tense like Cloverfield?
No. It's tense like watching a baby play with a gun.
Is that worse than Cloverfield?
Yes.
I just remember when I think of tense movies, I think of when we went to see Cloverfield and we both were afterwards were like dizzy and we were saying that like the theater was like hot, like you could feel people sweating.
No, this was a movie where people were like yelling at the screen like no.
People were doing that when I went to see Bombshell.
Oh, let's talk about that in a second. When I came out of it, I said that's one of the best – that's – an amazing movie
I never want to see again. I feel that way about The Hours. Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
There are a few movies that are like that.
It's got funny,
I never want to watch that again, but it was great.
And it's got funny parts too, but the tension is just so tense. And it's the cinematography is amazing. The mise-en-scène is amazing. It's such a claustrophobic.
You got to have good mise-en-scène.
It's such a claustrophobic, cluttered, messy, dense movie.
Okay.
It's like it's so claustrophobic.
Does it start like? I get the feeling it's one of those movies that starts like in medias res, like
kind of yeah.
Like just right in the middle of something huge happening, and you gotta like think, you gotta pay attention, you gotta think quickly to like keep up, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's but it is a fascinating character, but he's such a flawed, fucked up character, which is why I think it's so funny that fucking user reviews on Rotten Tomatoes are like, he's such an irredeemable character. It's like, well, who told you that movies are supposed to be about people you admire? Like, that's what blows my mind about certain people. It's like, yeah, that's what, he's an irredeemable, fucked up character, who I would say is still kind of charming, but yes, he is an irredeemable, fucked up character. But, like, that's what's interesting about it.
Well, it's like Veep. I'm a huge Veep fan now. Yeah. I just watched it over the summer, and she's a horrible person.
Right.
And a horrible character, but that's the brilliance of it.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Like, wow, we you're watching somebody who's so not like you. Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Bombshell.
Yeah, so the scene, when I went to see it, and I saw it in a pretty packed theater, the scene where Margot Robbie goes into Ale's office and he's like being really lascivious and
he makes her pull up her dress.
There were people out loud being like, oh my God, don't, oh my God.
That's a tense moment.
Yeah, it was really tense. And a lot of the audience members I saw it with were like, oh my God.
I agree with you. I didn't have that in my screening, but I definitely felt that.
I think the movie's underrated.
It's underrated, yeah. It's being treated like a real failure, and it's not perfect, but it's much better than it's being rated.
I'll tell you why. Because it's political. Uh-huh. Because it's a good film. However, conservatives don't like it because it's critical of Fox News.
Yeah.
And liberals don't want to like it because they don't want to ever identify with or feel for Megyn Kelly.
Right. It makes the Fox News people human.
Right. Especially it makes Megyn Kelly and what's her face? The one whose story it really is. The one Nicole Kidman plays.
Oh, Gretchen Carlson.
Gretchen Carlson. They're the heroes of it.
Right.
But we know in real life that things are more complex conservative and they have some real, they've said some terrible things.
Right.
So people don't want to root for them. So it's kind of for nobody.
I get what you mean. But you know, even in the movie, there's complexity. Like there's a really great scene where Megyn Kelly is trying to see if Margot Robbie's character has been abused. And Margot Robbie is not a real person. She's a composite of a bunch of people. She's the fictitious character.
Which is interesting because the three leads are two real people and one fake person.
Yeah, I know.
It's interesting.
And she's trying to find out if she's been abused, and Margot Robbie's like, yes, I have. Have you? And she's like, yeah. And then it seems at first like she is trying to use Margot Robbie to get information. Mm-hmm. But then Margot Robbie turns it around on her and she's
says,
like,
Why didn't you say anything?
You could have helped me. You could have helped other people. And then Megyn Kelly's like, well, how do you think you get... Like, she becomes defensive. And she went from being like, oh, you poor baby, to being like, oh, you're an idiot. That's how you get...
How do you think a woman gets a TV show?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's complex. Going back to the point I made earlier that it's kind of for no one, I've read a lot of reviews critical of it because of the Kate McKinnon character too, saying like from both sides, saying like, well, she's an open lesbian, she shouldn't be working for Fox News. And then there are other people who are pro Fox News who are saying like, there are plenty of openly gay people who work at Fox News, and that's not like the way it is there.
It's interesting, is she based on anyone or anything, or is
she's this character who's a lesbian on the low,
right?
And she's like a secret Democrat, a secret Hillary Clinton supporter,
who just works there,
who just couldn't, she, her first job was at Fox News, and now she can't get a job anywhere else because she works for Fox News.
She's kind of Margot Robbie's girlfriend.
Yeah. They have an interesting...
Right.
I think Margot Robbie's best scenes... Yeah. She's bisexual, I guess, Margot Robbie's character.
And she's conservative. She really believes all of this stuff, but she's bi.
One of the best scenes
in the movie is,
I think, when Margot Robbie... There's a scene where she calls Kate McKinnon and tells her that he assaulted her, and she's crying. And it's just a really great... The acting is great.
The drama's great. It could have been funnier, or it could have tried... I don't think it knew how funny it wanted to be. I think it kind of was like, wanted to be kind of a dark comedy, but then also didn't.
Yeah. It also, I think, maybe if it has a flaw, it's that it tried to do too much in that it's ostensibly it's the story of Gretchen Carlson and Roger Ailes, but it really wants to comment on Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump.
Right.
So it marries those two stories together in a way that I don't think they were really that closely, you know, interwoven.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really good. I really, really enjoyed it.
We have to end this segment, but the one thing that really stuck out to me is like odd is I think they put way too much effort into trying to use makeup to make people look exactly like who they're playing. And I don't know exactly why, because it created some odd uncanniness. And it's like, you look enough like it. Like
Richard Kind as Rudy Giuliani was a weird one.
That was a weird one. I forget who it was who played what's his name?
The main guy.
O'Reilly,
yeah.
Like, he looked so
much
like
him. But it was uncanny.
Weird.
Yeah.
It was like, why do you need to do that?
You know who was good? The actress from Waiting, who played Jeanine Pirro.
Yeah.
And from Legally Blonde and from Beakman's World.
Of course. Yeah, she was good.
She was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back with Obsessions. welcome back to PCMC.
Welcome back to PCMC.
This podcast is available anywhere podcasts can be found.
Radio.com?
Yep. You fucking bet it is.
Oh, man. I can't wait to tell the kids.
Yeah. It's fucking everywhere. So, this is Obsessions. Anthony, what are you obsessed with?
I'm obsessed with another podcast that is better than this one.
God damn it.
No, I seriously am obsessed with a podcast.
What are you
that I was talking
with?
To you a little bit about. In Myers We Trust with Guyers and Rust.
No, with Gourley and Rust.
No, with Guyers and Rust.
Who's Guyers?
Gourley.
Oh.
So they made, because it was, so originally it was In Voorhees We Trust with Gourley and Rust.
Yeah.
And they loved the way that it rhymed so much that the title is In Myers We Trust with Guyers and Rust, even though it's Matt Gourley.
That's fun. I listened to the Voorhees one, and a big part of like that was like trying to brainstorm names for the next podcast.
Well, they have also like they love to do puns, and they, I guess, for, I never, it's funny, you listen to the Friday 13th, the Voorhees one.
Yeah.
I never did. I'm listening to the Myers one, which I'm loving, but it's only on Stitcher Premium, I think,
which I don't have.
I think when they went on bathroom break on Friday the 13th, they would say something funny, like it,
well,
was,
they, there was one point where they like they let a bathroom break happen, and it's like 7 minutes of dead air.
Well, I was going to say, one of the things I love about it is that it is so long form. Like,
yeah,
every episode is like 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
But in this one, they're like, they needed to, what was the thing they said with Voorhees? Like, they made a pun of like, I have to go to the bathroom. And it was,
oh, more peas.
More peas. Yeah. In this one,
I have to take a Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. In this one, they were like, spent the whole first episode trying to figure out like what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And it's so stupid. It's like, one of them will be like, hey, I got to go home, I got to use my bathroom. And then they'll be like, what do you mean? You can use my bathroom. He's like, no, I got to use my own. And he's like, are you kidding? And then the other one will go, psych, I'll try yours. For Michael Myers. So it's, psych, I'll try yours.
That's so weird.
It's so weird.
That's a
and
weird
they just
one.
Like riff to get there. At first they were going to do Drain Our Halloweenies.
That's
but then
weird.
They were like, that's sexist. So we need to redo it. And now it's, I got to cycle try yours.
That's weird. I want to listen to it. Have you been watching the films with it?
No, but I've seen them all so many times that I don't need to. Right now I'm almost finished with the part 5 episode. And it's slow going because, like I said, each episode is like 3 hours long. But I like that because you really feel like after every episode, like, wow, I feel stuffed. Like they really go through every scene, every minute. They talk about everything having to do with
really?
It. And it's funny, like they make a joke of how long they go. Like they'll be like, all right, so we're 15 minutes into the movie and this podcast is already at 1 hour and 47 minutes. But some interesting stuff, especially since Halloween Kills is coming out this year, and
yeah,
like it just seems pretty timely. And I've recently like revisited some of the Halloween movies.
Cool.
And I always really like the Halloween series, and I think it's got one of the more interesting, really interesting, really confusing timelines,
because yeah,
there's like 7 different ways you could watch
yeah
them, and they kind of get into that. And then there's the zombie ones.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really obsessed with it. So every time I'm in my car, I'm listening to it.
That's awesome. My hope is that like the last one, after it's aired and a couple months go by, they'll put it on the main
feed. I think so. And then my gut tells me that the premium one will probably be Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, I think they're going to do it all.
Yeah.
I think they're eventually going to do it all.
And Gourley I like from the Conan podcast.
Right. And then, of course, Paul Rust is from Love. And
yeah.
He wrote the last Pee-wee movie, and he's done a lot of interesting, weird shit.
Yeah.
Very cool. My obsession is a book that I just read. It's I'm really into nonfiction. I'm having this weird thing right now where I can't read fiction. I don't. It's like,
yeah, I go through phases like that sometimes.
I think I'm reading less. Like I'll admit something to you. I'll admit it right here on the podcast.
Go ahead.
2019 was the first year in 5 years that I didn't reach my
Goodreads
goal.
You didn't reach your Goodreads goal.
No.
You know, I stopped setting those because I just felt like reading is the one thing I've got that's fucking just for me, and I'm not gonna make myself disappointed.
Well, I feel like I'm not fighting against anyone. I'm not competing against anyone else. I'm competing against myself.
Yeah, but I don't want to compete.
I understand. I like it. I like it. But I didn't need it.
Well, you also do comic books. So you're a cheater.
Well, no. First of all, fuck you. Because the year that I decided to do a lot of comic books, I made it like over 100 as my goal.
See, what's crazy about me is like, I feel like I read a lot. I'm a, you know, I'm an English teacher. I'm a pretty like, you know, like that's kind of like my main hobby. But I think I probably read like no more than like 10 books per year. I feel like I do a lot of rereading.
Uh-huh.
I do a lot of reading of shorter things.
I rarely ever reread.
I love to reread. I discovered rereading like 5 years ago, and I feel like it's so rewarding and so fun.
Right. Well, they say that you can't remember anything until you reread it.
No, you can't.
It's literally, it'll go right out of your head.
Yeah. It's like listening to a song one time.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, the book that I read was called That's Mental. Painfully Funny Things That Drive Me Crazy About Being Mentally Ill by Amanda Rosenberg. Now, what I liked about this book was it was not self-help, but it also wasn't funny memoir like Roxanne.
So it wasn't like Roxanne Gay?
Yeah.
Well, Roxanne Gay is a little bit more academic.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of like Jenny Lawson, like Furiously Happy?
Yeah. It's like in between those two.
Okay.
Because it's very, very funny, but it's also kind of like advice, but it's also like I don't know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not a professional. This is just what I have done to help me through it. So I want to read you just a section from this book, which I found very...
Where'd you find this book? Like, how'd you stumble upon it?
Just going through Amazon, just looking at books.
Oh, that's cool.
Maybe it was suggested to me.
So this is a Kindle read?
Yes. I'm at a point right now where there's no more bells and whistles. I only read on Kindle.
Really?
And I don't
see,
read.
I still love going to Barnes & Noble, but I do find myself very often picking up a book at Barnes & Noble being like, oh, this looks good. And then I snap a picture of it and say, like, I'll download this on my Kindle later.
By the way, you hear that, kids? If your mom and dad work in bookstores, Anthony's the reason why you can't eat tonight. All right. So I'm going to read a section from this book. This is from a chapter called You Can Be Either Mentally Ill or an Asshole or Both. Just because I have a mental illness doesn't mean I'm incapable of being a dick. And while there are a few aspects of life where being mentally ill holds me back, being insufferable is not one of them. Okay, now this sounds like I'm a horrible person. I'm not. I'm a good friend. I'll support you through breakups, life changes, and daily wear and tear. I will immediately hate anyone you hate, no questions asked. When you ask me to take a photo of you, I will take at least 11 from different yet flattering angles. I won't pick you up from the airport, but then again, I'll never ask you to pick me up from the airport either. Good friend, indeed, although not too good to be true. Here are some examples. I've held grudges longer than Law and Order has been on the air, and I'll continue to do so well into the afterlife, when Law and Order will still be on the air. These grudges are aided and abetted by a stubbornness usually reserved for a teenage bull with an early curfew. The phrase, quote, cut off your nose to spite your face never made sense to me. Why stop just at the nose? I'd cage Travolta my face to spite my entire body. If we follow each other on Twitter and you unfollow me, not only will I not unfollow you, I will continue to like your tweets, not because I like them, but in the hope that maybe you'll see I'm still here, bitch, following you anyway. Some would call that tragic, but I like to call it childish and tragic. So it's a really funny book.
That sounds
book.
Really funny. What's it called?
It's called That's Mental by Amanda Rosenberg. It's really funny.
Sounds like a quick read too.
It is, yeah. It's like less than 300 pages.
Title. Does it have any structure?
Yeah. She goes through her life of not accepting being mentally ill and then being mentally ill in her like 20s and like suicidal ideation. And
what kind of, what does she have?
She's bipolar too.
Okay.
And she...
That's what Catherine Zeta-Jones says.
She tried to commit suicide. She tried to... I know you're supposed to say die of suicide, but when you don't die, what do you call it? You try to die of suicide?
I think it's attempt suicide.
She attempted suicide twice. And now she's married and pretty functional, but still mentally ill. And it's kind of like, how does she get there?
Okay. That sounds pretty good.
And...
did you find it to be like... Sometimes books like that like scratch an itch...
Yes.
Where it's like you needed to read that at that time. Is that how it felt for you?
Well, I'm mentally ill. So
mentally chill.
I have OCD, GAD, anxiety, depression, addiction issues, binge eating disorder. That last one I diagnosed myself. But you know what? When you eat to the point where you're crying in pain, I think you got it. At one point she actually, I think in the acknowledgement, she thanks Carrie Fisher and she's like my mental health icon. And
yeah.
And she's my mental health icon too. Everyone. And,
her books are so good.
Yeah. I've only read one of her books.
Which one?
The Princess Diaries.
Oh, that's just the one that's about Star Wars.
Yeah, I like her writing about that experience.
You got to read the other ones. They're all great, but she's really a great. She was so funny, and her books are so good.
And owning the mental illness is so great.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's God.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
She's amazing, though.
I'm happy that she and Debbie Reynolds went together.
Yeah. Did you see that documentary?
Yeah, it's the most charming thing in the world. I love when she's like. Of all the, you know, times I've been to rehab, of all the drugs I've been on, my mother's biggest regret for me is that I never had a cabaret show. And then they cut to Debbie Reynolds crying and being like, she has such a beautiful voice.
It's so much like Grey Gardens, which is what's funny.
I follow Gary Fisher on
Gary
Instagram.
Fisher, sure.
And it makes me so sad because like every once in a while he'll be like, miss my mommy today.
How does he type? Anthony, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I think we got a lot done.
We did it.
You bring a class to these proceedings.
Sophistication.
Yep.
Thank you.
Anthony Buongiorno, you can find him on this podcast.
here I am.
I'm Mike Buongiorno. This is PCMC. Follow Pop Culture Man Children on Instagram and subscribe to the podcast everywhere. You know what? Download every single platform and then subscribe on every single one.
Mm-hmm.
We end every episode by quoting Animal from the Muppets.
Go bye-bye.